Phil. Listen local.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Jeffrey Rose from Wild Yarrow Farm in Coshecton, New York, is ready for this year's growing season and shares exciting news about his latest, very special garden design. Brent Habig from Two Creek Farm is gearing up for another season of farm tours that demonstrate principles of regenerative farm practices. Then, from our archives, we'll hear comments from Ed Wesley about the importance of preserving the Skinner's Falls Bridge. All of that coming up on today's Farm and Country, after news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Tens of thousands are expected to gather in downtown Dallas this weekend for the National Rifle Association's annual convention. Tolowani Osibamowo of member station KERA reports that former President Donald Trump will likely be the main attraction this afternoon.
Trump spoke at the 2018 convention, and he'll be back as a keynote speaker at the group's leadership forum. He's positioning himself as a staunch supporter of the Second Amendment, but this month marks the anniversaries of several mass shootings in Texas, and Trump will be met with anti-gun violence activists outside. Miriam Sharma is with Moms Demand Action.
The NRA is in the business of weapons of war to kill people. I don't think it's a good image for Dallas, if I answer, you know, honestly in that sense.
The convention also comes amid Trump's ongoing hush money trial in New York. I'm Toluwani Osibamowo in Dallas.
President Biden is heading to Georgia this weekend. He's set to deliver the commencement address at Morehouse College tomorrow. United Auto Workers Union President Sean Fain expressing disappointment in the union's failed attempt to unionize two Mercedes-Benz factories near Tuscaloosa, Alabama. But Fain is vowing not to give up. Stephen Pasaha, the Gulf States Newsroom, reports that 56% of the votes cast were against union affiliation.
A majority of workers at Mercedes initially wanted to unionize, according to the union. Workers' pay had fallen behind in recent years, and workers say they were treated poorly. But Mercedes sent workers a clear message during this campaign. We know you're upset, but give us a chance to do better. And it kept on sending that message, says Mercedes worker Rick Webster.
It was every day. We were getting notifications on the Mercedes app. We were getting text messages, emails. We were having to sit through meetings every day watching a video or something of that nature, and it was all anti-union. And
the unions accused Mercedes of breaking labor laws and pressuring workers, but did not say yet if it would challenge the results. For NPR News, I'm Stephen Basaha in Birmingham, Alabama.
Nearly 10,000 people have now been evacuated from their homes in northeastern Ukraine since Russia launched its offensive across the border. The fighting in the Kharkiv region comes as Ukraine struggles with a manpower shortage. The BBC's James Waterhouse has details.
For Ukraine to openly be admitting that its troops are overstretched and struggling is a sign of how serious things are at the moment. And they are hoping for two things to take effect. Firstly, a controversial mobilization law, where it hopes enough men will be able to join the fight and slow that Russian advance. But it's also hoping that will be combined with tens of billions of dollars worth of American ammunition and weaponry. But at the moment, it is a time delay that is seeing Russia take more and more territory, and that's only increasing the political pressure here on Kyiv.
The BBC's James Waterhouse reporting there from Kyiv. And you're listening to NPR News.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, Brent Habig from Two Creek Farm is gearing up for another season of farm tours that demonstrate principles of regenerative farm practices. Then, from our archives, we'll hear comments from Ed Wesley about the importance of preserving the Skinner's Falls Bridge. But first, here is Jeffrey Rose from Wild Yarrow Farm in Coshecton, New York, ready to share his exciting news about his latest very special garden design. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farming Country. For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Back in Coshecton at Wild Yarrow Farm, because it's 2024, it's the start of a new season, and I had to come and see Jeffrey Rose in the greenhouse. So it's a new season. He's going to tell us all the good stuff that he's got inside this greenhouse, but then he's got some real big news that we're both anxious to share. Say hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, Rosie. Welcome back to Wild Yarrow Farm. It's always a pleasure to see you. We do have some exciting news. We started this farm 8 years ago and have been slowly building up a collection of plants and different kinds of varieties of each kind of plant. But we recently purchased another parcel of land adjacent to the farm. And to commemorate and celebrate that, I'm building a sunflower spiral that people will be able to come in and walk through. It's about 80 feet across. It's going to have 10-foot tall sunflower walls, and then a sod couch has been built in the center of it. We're really excited about it. It's going to be surrounded by a large pumpkin patch as well, so we'll be offering a you-pick pumpkin situation in the fall when the sunflowers are up. So I hope people will come out and see that. Diversity is really the key here. So we'll have different varieties of pumpkin. We have a lot of different varieties of basil, cinnamon basil and lemon basil and fine leaf basil and Thai basils and four different kinds of holy basil. We have four kinds of tulsi, each with its own properties. We have over 50 varieties of peppers, and this year over 150 varieties of heirloom tomatoes that we're really excited about. Almost all of them are old varieties and open pollinated, which means that if you save the seed, they will grow true to type. We only have a couple of hybrids just for fun. We also have a lot of different herbs and onions. You can be fooled by the warm weather. It feels really warm, and people are going to think, oh, I can put in peppers and tomatoes, but I'd caution against it just yet. It's usually a good rule to wait till Memorial Day. If you do put stuff in, just be ready to cover it. Be prepared to protect. That's the thing I tell people. Just be prepared. Have some pots. You can just put the pots upside down over the plant and just to protect them from frost. But that said, you can plant leeks and onions and shallots and chives. You can plant the hardier herbs, rosemaries and sage and thyme. We've also got lettuces that are ready to go in and Swiss chard, collard greens, kale. So there's a lot you can do right now to get out into the garden and get started. This warm weather makes us all want to get out there and get our hands dirty.
Mm-hmm. And for folks that don't have so much garden space, can you recommend some what to grow in pots on a deck?
Oh, absolutely. We have many tomato varieties that are good for pots. Some of the dwarf varieties. This year, we're experimenting with some micro tomatoes, which are small enough to grow on a windowsill. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I don't really know much about them yet. We're learning about it this year. I also have varieties of eggplant that can go in pots. One of them is called Patio Baby. It's bred just for that. So yes, you can definitely do a lot in a pot. I, in my garden, put all my peppers in pots because then I can bring them in. I can get a longer season out of them. So it's just about having the right size pot.
And just before all of this activity, what should gardeners do with some soil?
Well, you need to get in there and prepare your soil. You want to add some compost, add some manure, clean it up, pull out some weeds. If you don't like weeding, you don't like gardening. You got to just get into it. You got to get in there with your plants and take care of the soil.
Well, I'm inspired to see how everything's going to come into fruition out here in your new property. The sunflowers, a walking meditation. Describe that path and what inspired the design.
I'm not sure where the original idea came from. I mean, there's the famous spiral jetty. But When you're walking into the spiral, when you walk in, you be coming to the center. It is centering as you're walking. And then you can sit and relax for a few minutes. And then as you walk back out through the spiral, you're slowly rejoining the world and sending that energy back out into the world.
Well, it all sounds good, considering the world at the present moment.
No doubt.
Gardening is a good healing for every individual on the planet. So we look forward to checking in with you as the season goes. But for right now, I have my eye on that Tuscany rosemary back there. It really looks inviting. And some of the other things, these peppers, Habana. Look at all the names of these habaneros. Oh, my God. I can't even pronounce this one.
That's Pekin. Ooh. That's a little tiny pepper, a little tiny red pepper.
Well, thank you, Jeffrey.
Thank you, Rosie. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you. WildYarrowFarm.net has the nursery hours, location, and a fabulous menu of germinated herbs, vegetables, and perennials. The Catskill Mountains and Delaware River Valley is a region rich with fertile soil. Many of our local farmers are wise with knowledge that healthy soil is key to successful production. In the last 30 years, I've become acquainted with some of our farmers. They are prominent community members as educators, some with a presence in our farm markets. Like myself, perhaps you have experienced one of our area's local farm tours. There's so much to learn from farmers, and I believe it's good to learn where and how our food is grown. The documentary film Common Ground has recently increased awareness about regenerative farm practices. Two Creek Farm in Lakewood, Pennsylvania is a 100 acres farm in northeast Pennsylvania that was originally a dairy farm. The current owner, Brent Habig, has a background in global environmental project work, and in 2019 shifted his focus to regenerative agriculture. This farm production takes the approach that mimics nature, creating sustainable abundance. They're a diversified farm with poultry, ruminant animals, and organic vegetable gardens. Their Silva pasture system is a design that includes planting trees. Here are some comments I'd like to share from a previous conversation with Brent. Two Creek Farm, from what I understand, having been on a farm tour, you mentioned regenerative agriculture. Would you like to elaborate on this now?
Sure. So regenerative agriculture is essentially an approach that would allow the farm to be stronger and stronger each year to create more and more abundance, ideally without relying on external inputs. So that's the way nature itself functions. If you think about the journey from a volcano, and we basically have raw dirt and mineral all the way to a rainforest, nature is able to create abundance and succession. And the concept of regenerative agriculture is that we align our agricultural production with those forces such that we're able to produce more and more on the same land with less inputs, because we're basically following the approaches and working within the systems that nature has designed. Mm-hmm. So the alternative to that would be conventional agriculture, where we essentially view the land as something that we need to fix, and we would bring in all of the chemicals necessary for it to be sufficiently productive, and chances are each year it would degrade, and we need to bring in more and more chemicals in order to continue with the same degree of production. So essentially you could think of it as a nature-based farming, where we are mimicking nature in the context of our agricultural management.
Well, we are in an area where progressive farming is taking place on many levels. Some farms use crop rotation or tilling. Tell us at Two Creek what methods you use to take this holistic approach to building the soil and producing crops.
Well, I guess firstly, diversity. So we're a diversified farm. We have layers, we have broilers, we have turkeys, we have hogs, we have ruminants, lamb, cattle. We also have veg and CBD gardens. So trying to harness all of that diversity together, that can allow us to close the loop on nutrient cycles where we're able to use our manures in our gardening. So that idea of nutrient cycling, we also mimic nature through rotational grazing. So the way we manage our ruminants as well as our poultry on the land would follow the way wild ruminants and birds would move throughout a landscape where they would graze intensely and then have that followed by periods of rest with the cattle first and the birds coming alongside or slightly after. So those types of approaches allow us to realize the animal impact on the land that improves our pastures year after year. We also follow the principle that the soil should be covered. And if you look in nature, it would be very unusual for soil to be open. So we would always have covered soil. We would not use tillage. We're using deep compost beds, similar to the way things might grow in a forest context. So regenerative agriculture, I think every farmer makes their own choices. You know, regenerative is that goal set of regenerating your farm, and somebody might choose to till. It's not to say that any specific technique would make you regenerative or disqualify you as regenerative. Each farm needs to make those decisions in their own context. But here, certainly no-till, diversification of our agricultural production, balanced nutrient cycling and rotational grazing, those are definitely some of the core concepts that we're implementing.
You used a word that maybe some folks don't know, ruminants. And I remember on the farm tour that I attended, I heard the word silvopasture. Would you explain those two things?
Sure. So ruminants are animals that would have the capability to produce protein from forage or grasses. So they can basically turn grasses into protein based on their digestive system. So that in general in our farm means cattle and sheep. We run those together in what we call a flurd, is a combination of a flock and a herd. Those ruminants have a unique capability because they can basically turn sunlight into carbon. The sun is able to grow grass. The animals can then turn that grass into protein and manure, and that can then build carbon in the soil. So that's a very powerful tool that our pigs, our poultry, simply do not have. They just take calories in that are not essentially immediately the result of sunlight on our farm. So ruminants have a key role. So it's just a general term for sheep and cattle. We do run those in our pastures, and our pastures we have set up according to a system called silvopasture, which is the integration of trees into those pastures. So rather than a wide open pasture, we are in the process of planting trees into pasture in different configurations with the idea that they will not interfere with the grazing capacity of that land, but also provide other benefits. So we have planted hundreds of trees into our pastures. They can, over time, offer shade. They can enhance biodiversity because animals are able to live in those trees. They can offer wind cover, so essentially some form of shelter for the ruminants. They're also able to pull nutrients from much deeper in the soil than the grass could draw. So they're able to cycle nutrients better into the pasture, and they can also be economically productive where we can get nuts or other products from them. So, yeah, and we follow a system called Keyline that also helps with our water management in the planning of those silvopasture systems. But yeah, I think that's another key technique here. We are trying to achieve the greatest resilience and diversity of our pastures as a pasture ecosystem. So we don't want to add genetics that don't belong there. I don't feel that I would be qualified to determine what to seed in. We're basically allowing the pastures to make those decisions. So the grazing should set up the conditions such that certain grasses or forages will flourish and others may not. And we're basically allowing that system to evolve itself in a way that hopefully tends towards increasing diversity. And that offers resilience. If we have a period with less rain, then hopefully we'll have some combination of grasses that can adapt to that context. So, yeah, we are not actively managing the genetics of our pastures or adding any seeds.
Two Creek Regenerative Farm offers farm tours that are both informative and fun. Participants are introduced to Katahdin lambs in the pasture and Berkshire piglets foraging in the forest. There's colorful heritage breed chickens and turkeys living on pasture, and hens with rainbow eggs in a mobile coop. 2024 Farm Tours, educational opportunities, and product information is available online at twocreek.net. Ed Wesley made a visit to our Jeffersonville studios in January of 2020. Our conversation led to talking about his sentiments and historic knowledge of the Skinner's Falls Bridge. This single-lane bridge spans the Delaware River, connecting Coshecton, New York, to Milanville, Pennsylvania, just above Skinner's Falls. For structural and safety reasons, this bridge is currently closed to traffic. Plans are underway to decide the fate of this 20th century piece of history built in 1902. Having lived in Milanville, Pennsylvania for 30 years, Ed came to appreciate the beauty of the Upper Delaware River. Let's listen to some of his archived story as he shares his sentiments and knowledge of the historic Skinner's Falls Bridge.
One of the pleasures of canoeing under the Milanville Bridge was to canoe through Skinner's Falls, which is a really nice shelf of rocks. It makes a beautiful rapids there, and everybody knows Skinner's Falls. That's why the bridge is called the Skinner's Falls Bridge. But the company that built it, Milton Skinner's company, was called the Milanville Bridge Company, and it was known as the Milanville Bridge, you know, for a long, long time. The Milanville Historic District consists of, there are about 21 structures, including the bridge, four houses that had been owned by the Skinner family, which first came here in the 1750s, the former one-room school, a church, and of these 20 or 21 structures, 14 of them were so important that they were then and are still now listed on the U.S. National Register of Historic Places. In just a small compass, you have an area of houses and structures like that and a beautiful bridge. So that's the Milanville Historic District. Anyway, the bridge company was chartered. Work on the bridge began in 1901. It was finished a year later, and it's been there ever since, built by the American Bridge Company, which itself has quite a history. It was founded by the great financier J.P. Morgan in 1900, and a year later incorporated in Andrew Carnegie's U.S. Steel Corporation, known as the American Bridge Company. They went on to build some of the really great structures and great bridges in the world. For example, with a steel fabricating plant that Carnegie built downriver from Pittsburgh, supplying the steel, they built the Empire State Building. And in recent years, the most famous bridge the American Bridge Company built is the Verrazano Narrows Bridge down in New York. Anyone has seen that. It's one of the wonders of the world. They built beautiful bridges all over the United States and around the world. They became known for that. And it may very well be that our little Milanville Bridge was the first bridge that this famous American Bridge Company ever built. And it seems to me that historically that would have some great value. If I found a sketch that Pablo Picasso, the artist, made when he was 5 years old, I bet it would sell for thousands of dollars today. Well, it is the fact that our Milanville Bridge is like one of those very early sketches that a great artist would make. And a tremendous amount of artistry went into that bridge. The trusses, particularly in different light regimes during the day, the way they reflect light are just amazing. I think it's the most beautiful bridge that I've ever used regularly. I wish my feelings were shared by others who just take it for granted. But this bridge is also on the National Register of Historic Places, the National Register of Historic Bridges. Pennsylvania put it on the National Register, so it has renown in the state and renown nationally. In the whole 75 miles of the Upper Delaware River, I think one of the most beautiful riverscapes and landscapes is right at the Milanville Bridge, above and below it. It's really a beautiful, beautiful area. Tourists should be flocking to see it, particularly in autumn. When the colors change in autumn, it's just unspeakably beautiful. If I were a great painter, I'd want to paint that area, and I'd want to paint the bridge.
These comments are from Ed Wesley about the importance of preserving the Skinner's Falls Bridge that connects Coshocton, New York, with Milanville, Pennsylvania, at the Delaware River. May 26, 2024 is the deadline to submit public comments about the repair of Skinner's Falls Bridge. Send your written comments by email to skinnersfallsbridgeaecom.com. Information is available at DamascusCitizensForSustainability.org, where you can post your comments regarding Skinner's Falls Bridge and find more audio from Ed Wesley's comments on historic Milanville and the Skinner's Falls Bridge. You can find comments on the Skinner's Falls Bridge by PennDOT's Rich Roman on our webpage, wjffradio.org. We hope that you enjoyed our show this week with production by a Radio Catskill volunteer. Special thanks goes to our guest, Jeffrey Rose, from Wild Yarrow Farm in Coshocton, New York, and Brent Habig from Two Creek Regenerative Farm in Lakewood, Pennsylvania. And to Ed Wesley, always in our hearts, he left a legacy of knowledge, love, and passion for monarch butterflies, the Delaware River, and historic Milanville. This has been your host, Rosie Starr. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Listen on air at 90.5 FM on your phone or smart speaker and online at wjffradio.org. Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and beyond. DamascusCitizens.org.
Angela Page here from Folk Plus. You know about your family tree? Close with your siblings, your grandparents? We'll explore these topics musically on the next show.
I come from people who came from nothing.
Genealogy and family trees.
On the
Sunday at 4 or on the archives.
They came from suffering.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we got Bongo.